5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save, with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping?
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, no, it's the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. It feels good to Geico.
Merkle Media.
Start looking at people like they don't matter. I'm waking up to the fact, more than a little bit shallow. I'm lost in this hole, but I don't wanna. I'm lost in this hole, 'cause I'm just trying to
good, everybody. This is Joel Thomas from Free the Rabbits, and how are all the free range rabbits doing out there today? I want to say thank you to everyone who has been going to Spotify and going to Apple Podcasts and hitting the follow button in addition to listening to the show. It's such a small thing to do, but it helps the show grow immensely. So for that, I want to say thank you. And if you haven't hit the follow button on Spotify or Apple, make sure you do that now. Also, if you've been a follower of the show and you haven't given it a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, go do that now. And if you're on Apple, make sure you write a great review to go along with the 5 stars. That is another way to help the show grow and get deeper into the algorithm, which allows it to get even more people to follow us. If you're new to the show, take a listen, and if you enjoy it, go give it a 5-star review immediately afterwards. Also, for the people who have been asking how they can donate to the show financially, we have several ways to do so. You can go to buymeacoffee.com/freetherabbits, where we have monthly memberships, or you can give a one-time donation. If you're following on YouTube, we also have memberships there with different tiers, all of which have custom emojis you can use while on the channel. And if you can't donate financially, just you donating your time is the best gift possible to the show. And for that, thank you so much. Keep sharing the show, everyone. Now, let's get into it. What's up, up, free range rabbits? We are back for another episode, and I'm excited about this week's episode. We're going to get into North American stargates and their connection to off-world entities. And we're going to talk about the government's interest in some of these sites as well, and what that may have to do for our future. And we're going to start today with the Hopi Native Americans, and they primarily live in northeastern Arizona. This is important because some of these particular sacred places or stargates will be in this particular area, and we'll talk specifically about them a little later on, but we'll build into it, and we're going to talk about different Native American tribes as we go. Plus, we'll talk about some of the government's operations to procure some of these stargates, or at least what we can say, hey, it looks like they may be up to more than just what they're telling us on the surface. So the majority of the Hopi tribe of Arizona live on the Hopi Reservation in northeastern Arizona, but some of them also live in the Colorado River and at the border of Arizona and California. And the name Hopi means behaving one, one who is mannered, civilized, peaceful, polite, who adheres to the Hopi way. And some sources contrast this to other warring tribes that mainly built their cultures around plundering other tribes and other areas. And it's said to be Hopi is to strive towards the concept of having a reverence for all things, peace with all the things around you, in accordance to the creator and caretaker of the earth, who they call Maasau, M-A-A-S-A-W. And the Hopi observe religious ceremonies for the benefit of the entire world. And we're going to get into some of the regions where they're doing some of these ceremonies and some of these entities that they were talking to in some of these different mountaintops and secret places, sacred places. And we'll hear from specifically people from these tribes that are talking about it too. It's very interesting, and it's very interesting the correlation between Native Americans and extraterrestrials, or what they might consider extraterrestrials, or what ancient astronaut theorists consider to be extraterrestrials. I think it's something completely different. I do think that these entities who on some of these petroglyphs look a lot like gray aliens or reptilians are actually entities that are masquerading as good and are probably giving some level of truth to some of these Native American tribes, but at the same time, it's also deception. And we're going to touch on just a little bit about where Native American tribes all around North America might have come from and what their DNA might also be intermingled with. This kind of goes back to what I've been saying since before the Good Nephilim series, but just in general, how I think that many people across the world have bloodlines that they can't even trace. And I would suggest a lot of us may have bloodlines of things that are otherworldly, because you have to consider from the time period of after the flood till now, that's a long time. That's a lot of intermingling. That's a lot of, I can't trace my bloodline all the way back. And if I did, I'd probably be shocked to see what might be intermingled with it. So I just say all that to point out that I'm not pointing a finger at anyone of Native American origin saying that, ha ha, you're evil. Nothing like that. I'm just saying in general, I mean, I could trace mine back to, especially if I'm looking at Ireland and some of the stuff we talked about during the Bloodlines of Jesus series and what we consider those bloodlines to actually be. Well, I'd be in the same boat more than likely. So, and I think a lot of people would be too, because I don't think this is just relegated to one particular area in the world. I think this happens all across all countries, all nations around the world. So I don't think this is just an isolated thing, or it's only people with Rh negative. Not at all. I think there are so many different ways to look at it, and we'll probably never actually know the true answer to it. And I think that's the beauty of going down these rabbit holes in research, is knowing that you'll never really truly have the answer. So in knowing that, that gives you the ability to get out of the rabbit hole, to go outside, touch grass, and connect with the people around you, knowing that none of us will ever truly have the answers to a lot of these mysteries that are presented. So we know that the Hopi people are descendants of the ancestral Puebloans, and they're also known as the Anasazi. And I don't really need to get too deep into the Anasazi again, because I've talked about it several times on this show, and it is a Navajo word meaning ancient ones, but it also has some other pretty negative connotations to it as well, which we've talked about. So the Hopi are descendants of them, and really these ancient Anasazi are kind of the first trickle-down effect, right? And this is an idea that I'll bring up later in this episode of where they might have really come from. Because again, we have to tie the Nephilim, the Rephaim, these giants into the Native American lore, because they talked about them all the time. And they were actively either fighting them or they were working with them. So many different things that we hear about. And obviously, as we're going to show, if you're on YouTube or Rumble, some of the petroglyphs and some of these entities that the Native American tribes are talking to too, specifically the Hopi. And there's several others as well we'll talk about. But it's very interesting how that North America is a very fascinating place. We don't really know the origins that surround it. You know, we hear mainstream talk about how the Native Americans were the first here, but there are so many holes in that when you start looking at all of these different people and histories that have come here and when they did, and it's very vast. And I don't think that one, you could do that in one episode. And number two, I don't think it was necessarily the Native Americans. I think that they were definitely here early. And I think when they did show up, it was fairly quick and fast. And when we look at it historically, what's going on? And we'll get into that a little bit in this episode too. But we do want to get into the real connection with Native Americans when it comes to ancient technologies and entities. And one of the things that the Hopi that they worshipped and at the center of all their legends were the Kachina entities. And these were mysterious beings, and they point to these extraterrestrial roots of the Hopi people. Now, you'll see that terminology in a lot of New Age writings when they talk about Native Americans. It's interesting that a Native American lore and the modern New Age movement really overlaps a lot. They have a lot of the very same types of ways of thinking. And it makes perfect sense, especially when we're talking about these extraterrestrial entities that are connecting to us and they're a part of us, i.e. star seeds, which we've talked about plenty of times on the show, and having the DNA of these entities, which a lot of the Native Americans in their lore say the same thing. Now, according to Hopi beliefs, the god figure Maheo was the creator of humanity. He came from the sky to place the Hopi on Earth. So the Hopi weren't even here. According to the Hopi legends, that an entity, this god figure, Maheo, brought them here. So they weren't even created here. They weren't even the product of another man that was before them. They were brought here. Now, Maheo told the Hopi that they were created as a distinct race and that other races also originated from the heavens. This is very interesting in this mythology of the Hopi. And there's a part that I'm going to suggest that they might not be far off with some of this too when we're talking about the abrupt arrival of some of these Native American tribes. So these Kachina, these entities, they're seen as space brothers of the Hopi, and they're often said to arrive in craft resembling spaceships to communicate with the Hopi. And these Kachina have supernatural powers. They transmit technology and knowledge and all cosmic ties with the Hopi. And you'll see this in even some of the petroglyphs, which we'll be showing here on YouTube and Rumble. And it's fascinating because I know ancient astronaut theorists will point to all of these different cave drawings and petroglyphs and say, these are aliens. And they might not be far off in the sense of what these beings are doing and the way they're manipulating craft that they create. And if we're going to tie this into the modern UFO movement, and we're talking about entities working with governments and brokering them technology, well, why wouldn't they have been doing that also with these Native American tribes as well? Especially if they were presenting themselves as gods to them, then I believe absolutely that this could have been a part of their actual reality. What's also interesting too is in Hopi legends, they describe the Hopi as having lived in underground cities alongside extraterrestrials. So this lends to the idea that there have been underground civilizations all through time, and that even during cataclysms, people went underground and they came back above ground. And this lends to the idea of the Nephilim before the flood going underground and coming back above ground. Obviously, that's just one idea of why they reappeared after the flood. But we hear this throughout all kind of different cultures with different cataclysms. And if we want to suggest that there was more than one cataclysm, which I believe there was, I don't know how many there has been, but I do know that we've got the flood, the deluge that we know about. I believe that there was more than likely another flood before Adam, and there were civilizations before that, angelic civilizations and pre-Adamite man, all these different things. And there could have even been a cataclysm before that. We don't know how old Earth really is. And this is just me because I lend to the idea of the old Earth theorizing when it comes to how old the Earth actually is. But again, none of us actually really know, but I can say in most cultures that it is suggested that the Earth is very old. And I don't think that we should dismiss that by any stretch. And I don't think that goes against the Bible in any way at all. And in these Hopi legends, they talk about the underground. They said the cities are said to be equipped with advanced space technologies, and the Hopi are believed to have undertaken space voyages, which makes sense because you see all the spirals, which represent portals, which also represent stargates. And we know that there are tons of different stories that come out of the Native Americans about them traveling off world, and whether that's space or whether it's another dimension, which I lend to the other dimension idea more so because we don't know how many other dimensions there are. We don't know what's going on there. We don't even know if stargates can connect to cities underground or just portaling across the world to get somewhere quicker. You know, I just saw the new Superman film, and portals are a big part of that. And I found it very fascinating because Lex Luthor has these stargates, these portals, and they go into these portals and they meet in this pocket realm. And I think that's just another way of them putting out information that they already have. And they do it through fictionalized media. They get you prepped for something in the future. And I thought that was really interesting, but I do think it blends to this idea of the Native Americans also traveling when it comes to these portals and stargates. So another part of the Hopi beliefs is that humanity came to Earth from the cosmos and that the Hopi are the last remnants of this cosmic migration. And their prophecies also tell about natural disasters, which have cause cataclysms on the Earth, and they believe that there's another large one looming as well. But it's very interesting that the Hopi believe that they are the last remnants of the cosmic migration when humanity was coming to Earth, which I don't buy that part at all as far as people coming to Earth. However, I can say if there is this, and this is just me theorizing, if there is the idea of a pre-Adamite man, and I promise on my Old Earth series, I'll do an episode about pre-Adamite man and what that might look like and who they might have been. But if we suggest that there were some that survived that cataclysm before Adam, well, we don't know how they survived. And there's several different ways they could have. And it's possible that pre-Adamite man left the earth and then came back later, went underground. It does lend to a lot of these cultures talking about going under the ground, then coming back. Again, just speculating and theorizing, and I'll probably hone in a lot harder on the actual research and how it could work when I do the pre-Adamite man episode of Old Earth. But it's interesting. It's very interesting that a lot of these cultures, and the Hopi being one of the main ones that talk about this. And according to the Hopi, the Kachinas, they're celestial beings and they descended from the heavens. Classic. We could, you know what I think they are. And they came down to impart knowledge and wisdom to the Hopi people. These beings by the Hopi were revered as intermediaries between the human world and the realm of the gods, and they helped with all of their spiritual growth and societal development. Tale as old as time. Beings who helped mankind to progress by giving them technology and wisdom. This has been going on since literally the dawn of time. But we were talking about cataclysms and the Hopi. And central to their belief system is these prophecies and the concept of cycles, cycles of creation, destruction, rebirth, and that shapes their history as well as our history, according to the Hopi. And they believe that we're currently living on what they call the fourth world, and it is a time marked by turmoil and upheaval. And according to their prophecies, there will be an emergence of the true white brother. And I thought that was interesting, the verbiage there, because it really makes me go to theosophy and the great white brotherhood and the secret chiefs and the Mahatmas. And, you know, I'm sure you guys are tired of me talking about it, but it's going to keep coming up because it's like every single culture has that version of these ascended masters. And according to the prophecies of the Hopi, that there will be a true white brother. And this figure will usher in an era of peace and enlightenment. And to get to that, we also need to bring up Planet X or Nibiru. And we were talking about cataclysm cycles in the 3,600 years that the Sumerians talk about, that cycles every time there's a cataclysm. And the Nibiru cataclysm is supposedly a disastrous encounter between Earth and a large planetary object. And some believe that it's a big doomsday event. It's going to signal the end of time, but they said it's happened before, depending on who you talk to, right? Now, the idea was first put forward in 1995 by Nancy Lita, and she was the founder of a website called Zeta Talk, and she is a computer professional. And after she wrote Zeta Talk, she awakened late in life to her contactee status. So she wakes up later and realizes, oh, I've been abducted by these Zeta Reticulite grays. And she said that they took her to the star system of Zeta Reticuli, these Zeta Reticulans, and they put an implant in her brain, and she was chosen to warn mankind about an object that was sweep through the inner solar system. But she said it was going to happen in May of 2003, and then she kept pushing the date. Very typical about a lot of doomsday theorists or doomsday prophets. They'll give you a date, and they'll say it's going to happen here, and then it doesn't happen, and they move it. So she talks about Planet X or Nibiru, but that's the word Nibiru is actually derived from the works of Zachariah Sitchin. And if you know anything about Zachariah Sitchin, he really pushed the idea of the Anunnaki from Sumerian culture and tied them into being a race of extraterrestrials in a planet called Nibiru, which is this Planet X, this 10th planet, which, by the way, mainstream scientists have been trickling this out over the past few years, talking about this mysterious planet that's seen on the outer portions of our galaxy. And it's interesting. Why would they be talking about that? Why would they be bringing that up? Now, it depends on what your belief system is when it comes to the Earth and how that operates. You may say it's a complete psyop. You may say it's a half psyop. Some people may say it's real, but how they're conveying the information is the psyop. who knows, right, as far as what their goals are with the information, because we know that the info that they're giving is definitely filtered through whatever they want us to feel and think about it. But I can say that this Planet Access Nibiru, whatever you want to call it, is being talked about, trickled out very slowly through different scientists and astronomers. And some of them will be, quote unquote, blackballed by the industry. But I kind of think that it's done on purpose to make it look more realistic, especially to the people who might not trust the government at all. There's so many different avenues to think about. But we do know that consistently throughout cultures, that there is this mysterious planet that keeps showing up. And this is talked about with the Hopi. And they do talk about this blue star Kachina. And they say when it makes its appearance in the heavens, the fifth world will emerge. And this will be the day of purification. So again, according to the Hopi, we're on the fourth world. When the blue star Kachina shows up, that's when there will be a day of purification. Now, the star Sirius, which is loosely tied to Pleiades, which the Pleiadians are also tied into the Kachinas. So that lends right into the New Age movement and the Pleiadians and them also giving us information and giving us a way forward through this dark world. So we got these entities who are here to help us. And this is exactly, it's all the same thing. And this blue star Kachina is considered to be Sirius, according to the Hopi. But again, I think this also ties back into more or less planet Nibiru, planet X, if we're talking about cataclysms and something massive showing up. But we could even say, hey, it's going to be the star Sirius that is the one to start this off. Again, that's the convoluted part, because we have to look at both scenarios or just a rebranding, right? The modern man is going to rebrand it in conjunction with these entities to make it work the way they want it to work. So the idea of the blue star Kachina actually shows up in Frank Waters' writings on Hopi mythology. And Frank Waters was an American writer, and he was born in 1902 and he died in 1995. And he's known for his novels and historical works about the American Southwest. And he also founded the Frank Waters Foundation. And it's a big part of pushing literary and artistic achievement in the Southwest United States. So pretty big, viable name. And he's the one to first bring the name Blue Star Kachina to the forefront. And his father was also part Cheyenne, by the way. So that's where he was able to get access to a lot of Native American literature and talk to a lot of Native Americans with their passed down oral traditions. And this is where he said to have gotten the idea of the blue star Kachina. And he says that the beginning of the new world, this fifth world, will happen by the appearing in the form of a blue star. And that's where people tie that back into Sirius or the dog star, which is huge in the occult, but that's where they get the idea that it could be the dog star. I don't know. I'm also suggesting that Nibiru Planet X could also be tied into this blue star Kachina, because we hear more of that happening when it comes to cataclysms. But again, it could be that this is an actual star that they're saying is going to show up. And listen, guys, I'm not saying that I'm buying this. I'm just saying this is what they're saying that it could be. And I'm trying to surmise what this blue star Kachina actually is, outside of the basic idea that, oh, it's Sirius, the biggest star that we see. And maybe, you know, it could be the dog star. I don't know. But I'm just tying in the cataclysm part to what I know about another giant celestial being that shows up whenever there is a massive cataclysm on the Earth. So according to Frank Waters, he says at the beginning of time, the creator created his nephew, Sotungnang, to construct places for life. And out of nothingness, Sotungnang created nine universes or worlds, I'm just going to throw this out there that ties really well into the Kabbalistic Tree of Life and a lot of tenets in Kabbalah. And maybe one day I'll do some weird mixture of the two. One for Te'awa, which is the creator, one for himself and seven others for additional life. The first three of these worlds, Tokpila, Tokpa, and Kusgerza, have already been inhabited and subsequently destroyed due to the corruption and wickedness of man. So these are the three before the four that we're on now. Each time one of the worlds is destroyed, the faithful Hopi are taken underground and saved from destruction to later emerge and populate the next world. And according to Waters, he believes that humanity is currently residing in Tuakichi, which is this fourth world. And like the previous worlds, it is prophesied to be destroyed because of the corruption of humanity. And it's interesting because this is also the terminology that he brought forward, saying that the day of purification is when the true white brother will come to earth in search of the Hopi. And he will help them. But if he can find no uncorrupted men or women, then he's just going to let the world be completely destroyed. So that lends into a very Gnostic idea of killing the ego, working on oneself to be able to transcend. And I will say this, a lot of these Native American beliefs, and specifically the Hopi beliefs, are considered by some people to be metaphorical, could actually mean more of a metaphysical transcendence than an actual physical thing happening. So we have to look at that whole Gnostic ideology that's thrown in even here when we're looking at this Hopi belief system. Now, Jason Colavito, and he is an American author and independent scholar, and he specializes in studying fringe theories. He actually looks at all kinds of lore about extraterrestrials. He's written several books, The Cult of Alien Gods, The Mound Builder Myth, Legends of the Pyramids. He basically goes into these trying to disprove them. That's kind of his deal. So when he was looking into Frank Waters' book, he said he couldn't find any reference to the name Blue Star Kachina, and he believed that it was created in a more modern time period, 1950s is what he's looking at. He actually tied it into a Methodist pastor, David Young, who had picked up a Hopi hitchhiker, and he wrote a pamphlet on what the guy was talking about. I don't know. Again, if it's oral traditions passed down, then Jason Colavito wouldn't have been able to find anything written about it anyway. So I don't consider him to be some sort of great source to say, oh, that's it, when I know for a verbatim fact that Native American tribes have passed down a lot of what they believe through oral traditions. I know that just from being out in Utah and talking to so many different Native American tribes, men and women, and most of what they told us were things that were passed down. It weren't things in writing. It was stories that were passed down, things that happened, even if it was four or five generations ago, it's still things that were passed down. So I don't know if I buy completely Colavito on this one, but I'm leaving it open to the fact that Frank Waters could have made it up, but it just ties in pretty nicely to what the Hopi already believe. And I think it's just more of an explanation, a little bit deeper way of looking at it. So we're talking about stargates, and we got to talk about celestial markers. And we know that Native American tribes followed the movements of celestial markers. And they actually have legends regarding this movement, and they call it star knowledge given to them by the Kachinas. And according to the knowledge given to them by the Kachinas, it said that beyond the land where they live is the sky, and beyond that are dimensional portals or sky holes. The next level is an area called the Ocean of Pitch, where the beauty of the night sky and the galaxy spin out towards them. Beyond these are the boundaries of the universe. These boundaries are what they call the rim. And it said that four different extraterrestrial groups sit on top of them. And to look into the underground portion of the cataclysm, the Apache, other Pueblo Indians, the Zunis, they all have a very similar tale of ancestors emerging from the underground world, generally after some sort of reboot or cataclysm. And it's always linked to star gods or star people who brought them here from outer space. This lends back to these extraterrestrial groups on the rim. But when they go underground, specifically the Hopi, they have two groups of people that they are underground with that help protect them. They have the ant people who, and you're going to see these pictures come up, they look like typical grays. They have the big eyes, big heads, little bodies, and they have the snake people, and they look an awful lot like reptilians. So that really plays into this underground aspect of these subterrestrials. And we talked a lot about subterrestrials on the Secrets of Solomon Island series, and I think it plays out everywhere, all around the world in different cultures. And these are what these particular beings are that the Hopi and these other tribes talk about, but specifically the Hopi talk about the ant people and the snake people. And speaking of extraterrestrials that the Hopi think they came from, they actually tie what they call the Chubacan. And this is what the Pleiadians are, because they come from the same star sector, and it means those who cling together, Chubacan does. And the Hopi actually believe they are the direct descendants of these Pleiadians. So again, it's this starseed DNA that these Hopi have in them, and I'm not going to disagree with them. We're going to talk about in a little bit why I don't disagree with them. However, I don't think it's Pleiadian DNA or the Chubacan DNA. It is, but it's not, if that makes any sense. They believe it's one thing when I have a different belief of what these beings are and what their motivations are in the end. And I don't think it's necessarily a good thing, even though they may masquerade as beings of light. Now, to get to the move into the Stargate portion of this, when we start talking about high places, well, many Native American tribes believe that the home of the Kachinas was on top of a mountain where there were great cloud formations. And I know that many people have talked about UFOs showing up on mountaintops and then being able to hide in what's called lenticular clouds, which are these cloud formations that seem to be produced to conceal the ships. And that's what some people think are some of these moving clouds. I will say, just to give a shout out to my buddies over at Cryptids of the Corn and Justin England, who wrote a book about this, I do think a small portion of those clouds moving around erratically and looking like that could be a UFO. It's an unidentified flying object, but there is a small portion I think are actually living, and they come from these upper stratospheres and they get knocked down. But this isn't what we're talking about here. We're talking about actual ships that, with these beings who come and meet with these Native American tribes on these mountains, whether it's through a Stargate or they come and land with these ships and present themselves as gods, or they are the creators of these different Native American tribes, which gave them the DNA. I believe that these mountaintops are kind of the beginning of a lot of that activity. And we're going to talk for sure about some of those mountaintops in particular and some of these mysterious gates where Native Americans are said to walk right through. And to tie it around back to the Hopi and their mythic mountain that they talk about, these mythic mountains, the home of the Kachinas, the gods, you know, it's very sacred on these mountaintops. And in their petroglyphs, they have a lot of these luminous discs of light that appear throughout all of their land. And interestingly enough, a lot of these ships look a lot like Billy Meyer's Pleiadian Space and Beam ships. Now, if you need to know who Billy Meyer is, Edward Albert Meyer, and he's commonly nicknamed Billy, is the founder of a UFO religion called the Free Community of Interest for the Border and Spiritual Sciences and Ufological Studies. and he's an alleged contactee whose UFO photographs are claimed to show alien spacecraft. You've probably seen all of these pictures of his. And as a matter of fact, it's widely pushed as fraudulent by a lot of skeptics and ufologists. And they say that he used models to hoax the photos. We don't know for sure. And I'm going to throw that out there. And I know when you look at the photos, people will say immediately they're fake. Oh, he hung this here, whatever. The one thing they've never been able to do is prove where the fakery is. All they say is they don't believe they're real. But what they have to say is that the photos were not doctored. They've been studied a million times over. They weren't doctored. So if he faked them, he faked them by using whatever models he had, somehow hung them in a way that made them look like that they were farther away than they actually were. Again, there are no strings in these photos, and it's been proven the photos are not doctored. So he found some way to place these things in areas that make it look like that they were flying. And I'm not saying that he didn't, because I can't prove that they're real, but I can say that it's been proved that they weren't doctored. And you'll see a bunch of these photos come up, and you'll probably recognize one of them because it was in the first four seasons of The X-Files, and it was behind Mulder's desk in his office, and you would see it all the time, and it says the truth is out there. So it's interesting.
Want to feel more confident with your finances this year? If you have 60 seconds, I can show you how quick and easy it is to start building healthy money habits that could last you the entire year just by using Rocket Money. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link all your accounts and see your entire spending picture, your subscriptions, your upcoming bills, your due dates, everything. Step three, tap a subscription you don't use and cancel it. Boom! That's money back every single month. Step four, create a financial goal for something you want to save for, whether it be a vacation, a retirement account, or a pet's birthday. We don't judge. Now let the app automatically move small amounts of cash towards your goal. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you saved. Similar to the over 10 million members on the app that have saved up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Use the savings challenge as one step closer to feeling better about your finances today at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. One more time, it's rocketmoney.com/cancel.
And that also, these images in the petroglyphs of the Hopi, they look very similar disc-shaped craft. I don't know. And even Meyer, his story, his own personal story, mirrors what the Hopi talk about too, because he says that his encounters began in 1942. Ha ha ha, the 1940s. Very interesting that here is Meyer having his big connection with these extraterrestrials. And then all of a sudden he's got these pictures of all of these craft, which he said that the entity Sfath, S-F-A-T-H, this entity told him that they would allow him to take these pictures so he could put these out. Again, he could be lying about the whole thing, could have made up everything, just tricking everybody. Maybe he found some ingenious way of making these craft look like that they're floating in the air. Who knows? But I do find that his story mirrors a lot of the Hopi Native Americans. And he says that this Plejaren, interesting, got the Pleiadians. Now we got this Plejaren, P-L-E-J-A-R-E-N, man named Sfath, this extraterrestrial, comes to him in 1942. Sfath actually dies in 1953. And then he begins communicating with an extraterrestrial woman, but she's not a Plejaren. And her name is Asket. And then he says in 1964, he didn't have any contact with any extraterrestrials. And then it resumed in 1975 when he met the granddaughter of Sfath. And then after that, another Plejaren man named Ptah. And he met other extraterrestrials as well. So he's having a ton of extraterrestrial activity outside of almost missing 11 years where he didn't. But they allowed him to take these pictures according to him. And he called them beam ships. But back to what he was presenting in these pictures were very similar to a lot of what the Native Americans, specifically the Hopi, were putting on these petroglyphs. And we have to look at the fact that there's all this UFO activity has been for a long time in Native American culture. They are given technology by the gods. They talk specifically about stargates and sacred sites on their land. So when the government of the United States became the government of the United States and expanded out and it's become what it is now, they've always been interested in weird anomalies, technologies, ways to advance our civilization behind the scenes without telling us. There's so much that we have no idea that our government and many governments around the world have access to. And you have to ask, why are our government constantly interested in what's going on in Native American lands? Even now, we're not even talking about when we came and took all the land and then we gave them reservations out of it later, but they're interested in what's going on in these reservations, these sacred sites. And we're about to get in that now and what they might have been trying to get access to or actually have access to now. So we're going to start with this report by Vine Deloria Jr. and Richard Stoffel. And it's about 370, 80 pages, something like that. I went through some of it. I didn't go through the whole thing. And some of it is very, hey, this is what we do on our land and this is our history. But then there are these parts that are just absolutely fascinating. And just to give you a little bit about who these guys are, Vine Victoria Deloria Jr., and he died in 2005. He was born in 1933. He was an author, theologian, historian, and activist for Native American rights. And he began his academic career in 1970 at Western Washington State College at Bellingham, Washington, and he became a professor of political science at the University of Arizona, where he established the first master's degree program in American Indian Studies in the United States. Very important guy. NBC News actually called him the star of the American Indian Renaissance. Richard Stoffel was the head of an applied cultural anthropology research team, and it conducts various kinds of funded studies. And he was from the University of Arizona, and they wrote this paper for the Department of Defense in June 1998 entitled Native American Sacred Sites in the Department of Defense. So on the surface, it looked like there was an effort by the DOD to recognize the supposed First Peoples sacred sites on their land, and they were going to help protect them. But actually, it was the sacred sites that the government was most interested in. And as we're going to look at a couple of parts of this actual paper, we're going to look at some of the chapters, and I'm going to read some from it, and you're going to find it very fascinating what Stoffel and Deloria Jr. are actually talking about when they're talking about the sacred sites in conjunction with the DOD and what their interest is. So chapter 3 is called Three Kinds of Sacred Sites. And on page 35, there's a type B, Sacred Portals, Recounting Star Migrations. And then type C on page 36, which is Universal Center Locations. All these are super interesting. And chapter 4, by the way, it's called Sacred Sites and Military Land / Activities. So it gets into the military and their connection to these sacred sites. But this lets you know what the sacred sites actually hold. So type B, Sacred Portals Recounting Star Migrations. And I'm going to read it verbatim so you know what it is. Several tribes have traditions which recount their passage from another star system to this one and their emergence on our planet as a particular location. These sites may be understood as portals, where it is possible to pass from one universe to another. With the advent of chaos theory and the elaboration of knowledge of the potential of black holes in the space-time fabric of the universe, these traditions now take on an added significance. So they are giving a scientific explanation to these portals on their sacred land. I was reading it, and I'm like, this is actually a real thing, that this paper was written about the DOD and their connection to these sacred sites It's just mind-blowing. I mean, literally, the name of the paper is Native American Sacred Sites in the Department of Defense. And they're telling you that there are portals on these sacred sites. And they're giving you the scientific explanation of how that, yeah, they're there. So they also say the Sioux suggests that there are several portals in the Black Hills area, and some of the emergence traditions of the Navajo and Mandan suggest that we may be dealing with similar experiences. In general, these locations are held in utmost secrecy, and outsiders will only find out about the location if there is the threat of physical destruction of the site. Ceremonies are performed at these locations on rare occasions and then under the most secure conditions. Obviously, we have not become privy to information regarding the locations of these sites, but have received more general information to the effect that they are a distinguishable type of sacred site. So they're telling you right now that they're doing rituals. Where are these portals at? The only way an outsider is going to find out if there is a threat of physical destruction of the site. But it also doesn't let you in on the fact that some of these people in the tribes are also working hand in hand with the governments. So the governments would know about these sites, and you know they're digging into it. So this gives you more of a reason of why the government is very interested in these Native American sites. It's more than just the stupidness that we hear in the mainstream that, oh, they want to put this pipeline through here for these ridiculous reasons that have nothing to do with the actual reason they're really there. So we're going to go to Type C, Universal Center locations. So Stoffel and Deloria Jr. say, for purposes of orientation among Native American tribal people, there is a tendency to identify one location as the center of the world with related identifications of other sites as the center of a specific tribal world. Getting into this world tree mentality, center of the world, center of the nexus. The world center site is revered because it provides a constant against which people can measure their relationship with the landscape. The location is most generally not a place where ceremonies must be conducted, although that possibility cannot be ruled out. More often, the identity of the site is used as a teaching device. Pike's Peak, for example, is regarded by the Sioux as the center of the world, while Harney Peak in the Black Hills also is seen as the center of the Sioux world, the tribes which they do not presently live in and on lands they occupied when they first encountered by the Europeans have universal centers also. It should be obvious that in a limited curved universe, any location can be the center. New locations can have equal standing to former locations. Frequently, the fulfilling of ancient prophecies means that centers must be transferred as events have unfolded. Changing of centers is therefore comparable to migration locations, where the passage of time moves the understanding of the people to a new level and more or less negates the central emotional. It gets really good right here in this last paragraph of this Type C. The admission that space-time portals exist, and that spiritual people can use them to move from one physical universe to another has been a very recent development, preceding this study by only a few years. Conversations with people from the Sioux, Cheyenne, and Cherokee within the past several years, now held in strict confidence as to the particularities, seem to suggest that these sites will be very important in the future. Very important in the future? Spiritual people can use these portals to move from one physical universe to another. And this is a recent development that preceded this particular paper study. And they know that it's a fact. And this entire study by Deloria Jr. and Richard Stoffel, who are writing this paper about sacred sites and its connection with the DOD, are talking about people being able to move through portals, and that this is a scientific fact. This is wild to me. It's wild that this is a paper that's out there. You can literally type it up and go through it. I encourage you to do it. You'll find this so much in so many different scientific papers and papers put together by professors at universities. They're all talking about this. They have been for a long time. Nobody really knows. It's not like the entire paper, which is, again, 370, 380 pages, is all about this. It's just buried kind of in the middle of the whole thing. It's mind-blowing. But at the same time, they are telling us that this is what the government is really after. They're really after these portals, these sacred sites. So in conjunction with these sacred sites, we know about plenty of ancient mound sites all through Native American land. We know of what the Native Americans say about them. We know of what we know about these burial sites. We know of giant bones being there. We know of some Native American tribes praying to the bones of these giants that are there. And again, that's negating the Smithsonian and what they've said over the years about giants and bones existing, not existing according to them. And I'm not here to talk about giant bones and burial mounds. I'm just bringing them up because we know that these Nephilim bones are also in these areas, in these sacred sites. So this lends to who built these stargates, who built them with their fathers, who was also here, maybe even prior to the Native Americans. We have to look at that possibility too, that the Nephilim were here first or a version of them were. Again, we don't know. That's in the speculative field. We have these mounds, these sacred sites, and we know that the knowledge of these giants and these giant tribes were passed down from generation to generation, and even UFOs are mixed in with them as well. And we know as early as the late 1990s that the U.S. government took steps to secure these sites for the Native people, but at the same time acknowledged the existence of stargates or portals, but also buried information in government reports, kind of like the report I just read to you, where it was buried within, you know, you're just reading it. No, this is like the first portion of pages really wasn't that interesting. Then all of a sudden, portals, and they're real. And I'm telling you, it's because of science. And you got to be spiritual to be able to move through different universes. Anyway, back to the DOD trying to help us. We'll see that consistently. And not to even mention at the end of that Type C where they said that the stargates or portals are going to be very important in the future. That was the most interesting verbiage to me. And if we want to look at the government's interest in stargates and how that they will perform certain things on Native American land without their permission and why they might be doing that, we have to look at the Dakota Access Pipeline, which was announced in 2014 and then actually started in 2016. And there were a ton of protests. And you were also known as the Standing Rock Protest. And they were a series of demonstrations in North Dakota. And they started in 2016 when all of the building started. And it was against the Dakota Access Pipeline. And the Sioux were trying to fight back against this pipeline, this oil pipeline that the government insisted needed to go through their land. And they said, we're trying to safeguard these ancient sites. Interesting. So the U.S. says that they want to transport all this crude oil across four states. And it was planned across under the Missouri River near Standing Rock Sioux Reservation. So the tribe argues that it would threaten their water source and violate their treaty rights in sacred sites. So that was a big part of it, were these sacred sites. And there was all kind of violence and arrest. Law enforcement was using extreme enforcement. They were hitting them with water cans in freezing temperatures, tear gas, rubber bullets. There were numerous arrests. Allegation of excessive force against the protesters. It was a mess. But we have to really zone in what the government was actually trying to do there. And by the way, the pipeline was completed in 2017. So the government did get what they want. But there was an excerpt from a news conference on the status of the protest. And this came out of Dave Archambault Jr., and he was a Sioux politician, and he served as a tribal chairman of the Standing Rock Indian Reservation in North Dakota from 2013 to 2017. Interesting, he did it up until that the pipeline was finished, and he was instrumental in Dakota Access Pipeline protests, and he continues to work to promote an understanding of the historical treaty rights and indigenous rights of Native American people. So from everything we can gather, he is definitely trying to help the Sioux and shed light on what goes on in Indian sacred places. And he comes out, and this is what he says. This is his words, verbatim. He said, I learned from my grandparents about the sacred areas within Blackfeet tribal territory in Montana and Alberta, which is not far from Lakota tribal territory in the Dakotas. My grandparents said that sacred areas are places set aside from human presence. They identified two overarching types of sacred place, those set aside for the divine, such as a dwelling place, and those set aside for human remembrance, such as a burial or battle site. My grandparents' stories revealed that the Blackfeet believed in a universe where supernatural beings exist within the same time and space as humans and our natural world. The deities could simultaneously exist in both a physical and invisible reality. That is, they could live unseen but known within a physical place visible to humans. So essentially, like a rift, there would be this opening portal, this way, for these entities who are already here. They can see and hear us, but it's a way for them to cross through, or we can cross through to have contact. It's a place of sacredness, communion with the gods, essentially. And he says one such place for the Blackfeet is Chief Mountain in Glacier National Park. He said this mountain is the home of Thunder, a primordial deity. My grandparents spoke of how this mountain is a liminal space, a place between two realms. So he talks about the liminal space. He talks about this area that is in between our realm and their realm. It's the place where you can commune with these deities. So here we are listening to Dave Archambault Jr., this Sioux politician who's trying to fight the Dakota Access Pipeline. And this is why he says he's trying to fight it, because this is where that our people commune with these deities, commune with these gods. So if this is true, and it is a liminal space on this particular mountain or in this area, there's several, then yeah, I think the pipeline was just a ruse, because that was the argument from the Sioux in the first place. You don't need to do it here. Why are you doing it here? You could go around. You don't need to go through here. Even the government's saying, oh, no, see, it makes it easier for us. We got to run this oil through here. No, they want access to these stargates, these liminal spaces, these places where people can commune with the gods, these deities. And here's the thing. And we're suggesting, per the paper that I read you earlier, that the DOD knows about these portals, and it's a scientific fact. Well, they would have technology to also spot out probably where some of these rifts are at, some of these liminal spaces. They could have already targeted it on some sort of mapping technology and said, this is what we need to go. We're going to say, hey, we're going to put a pipeline through here, because technically we can't legally take your land, but we can legally run this pipeline through it. And, you know, after we do it, and everything dies down from all the protests, you'll never know. And we're going to be in there doing all the things that we want to do with these stargates. And I personally think that that's exactly what they're trying to do with this pipeline and many other things that they've done to Native American lands. It's to get access to the gods. That's what the government wants. And not to say they already don't, but they're looking for every ounce of access they can. And we don't have to go too much further to look at another interesting procurement from the government on Native American lands. All we got to look at is Mount Graham International Observatory in Arizona. And if you'll remember, Tom Horn, the late Tom Horn, and he was a lecturer, radio host, best-selling author. I'm sure if you're in this space, you probably read a Tom Horn book or at least know of him. And he wrote a book called Exo Vaticana, and that caused a big controversy when he came out, because he actually went there and he was digging into why the United States, Italy, Germany, and the Vatican took over this 10,720-foot peak that was considered by the Apaches a sacred place. So the Apaches were fighting this. And the construction of it went up in September of 1993. And the entire premise of why they need this particular mountain is absolutely fascinating. For one, if you wanted an astronomical observatory built on the highest peak in Arizona, there are three other peaks that are taller. You got Escondida Mountain, which is 10,912 feet. You've got Mount Baldy, which is 11,421 feet, and Humphreys Peak, which is 12,635 feet. They're all taller. If you want an observatory, you want to put it on the tallest mountain, but you didn't. You put it on the fourth tallest, which makes no sense unless there's another reason for why they wanted it. And again, back to the Apaches, he said it's a sacred place. And Tom Horn, part of this research that he was doing into MGIO, and I'm going to read this verbatim to what he wrote about his experience when he was there. He says, this was essentially true when we walked up the gravel road from VAT, V-A-T-T, Vatican Advanced Technology Telescope, to the large binocular telescope, the LBT, where we spent most of the day with a systems engineer who not only took us to all seven levels of that mighty machine, pointing out the Lucifer device and what it is used for, which he lovingly referred to as Lucy several times and elsewhere as Lucifer, as well as every other aspect of the telescope we tried to wrap our minds around, but who also stunned us as we sat in the control room listening to him and the astronomer speak so casually of the redundancy with which UFOs are captured on screens darting through the heavens. Our friendly engineer didn't blink an eye, nor did any of the other scientists in the room. And we were shocked at this, how ordinary it seemed to be. So Tom Horn is there learning about this MGIO and why it's there, why the Vatican had interest there, why the Germans, the Italians, us, we had to have this mountain. Why? Well, because it's said to have some sort of Stargate, this communion with the gods. So why wouldn't you build a telescope called Lucifer on the top of it? We don't have to dig that hard, man. All this stuff's true. They did. So then we just have to put the pieces together on why they were doing it. Why did they need to do it there? What I'm surmising, and what a lot of other people have surmised that are looking at this different eyes than what the mainstream would try to tell us, is that they did this to have an access point to the gods. And I wholeheartedly think that. And a couple of people came out against it because they were talking about the significance of this mountain. We got a Keith H. Basso from the University of New Mexico. He's an anthropologist. And he said, the Apache believe that Mount Graham is essential for maintaining their traditional way of life. The telescope desecrates Mount Graham because they violate and impugn the mountain's quote-unquote life and all associated forms of life that have existed for centuries on the mountain. What is this life? What is the forms of life that have existed for centuries on the mountain? Ola Cassador Davis, an Apache woman who grew up in a family that worshiped quietly on the mountain, said, it's been carried on for generations and generations. Our ways of prayer were never open to advertising. We don't tell everyone what we're doing. We just go. We're called and we go. So something crazy has been going on this mountain for a long time. And the government procuring it and building Mount Graham International Observatory, there's a deeper meaning here. And there's an even crazier story. And a good friend of mine, Billy, from Permaculture Pimpcast, he and I've talked about it, his personal experience there. And I wanted to give him a little shout out because I'm going to do an in-depth presentation on Mount Graham and what actually is going on there and the observatory. And I want to have him on to tell the story of his own personal experience and the very weird things that happened to him in conjunction with the government. And he's got a lot of different things he could lay over that type of episode. And I will definitely try to get him on for that one. And I'll go way, 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 way deeper on what's going on Mount Graham. But I could not talk about the government's procurement of Native American lands for Stargate purposes or trying to connect to entities that are off-world without bringing up Mount Graham, because it's virtually impossible not to. Now, one of the last interesting Stargates I want to talk about is the Doorway to the Gods. And the first time this was talked about was by Ron Quinn, and he wrote this book called Searching for Arizona's Buried Treasures. And most of the book is about hidden treasures that the Spanish buried in the mountains or other things. But one of the most interesting stories that you talk about is this doorway to the gods. Now, Ron Quinn and his brother Chuck and Roy Purdy and Walt Fisher were the ones out there looking for these treasures. And Ron Quinn was a prolific writer of treasure hunting and paranormal stories for 50 years. And he put this compilation together of stories, but this was probably the wildest one out of all of them. And I find it very important as we're talking about the Stargates and what the Native Americans were saying about them. So during this 2-year odyssey, he was prospecting and treasure hunting in Arizona, and they had heard tales from all kinds of different descriptions and everything. But out of all of them, he said, his favorite was of this natural stone archway hidden deep within the Tumacacori Mountains, and it was located some 30-odd miles south of Tuscan. So he said the mountains are super harsh, and only serious treasure hunters even try to go through there. It's tough. He said they're unfriendly mountains. And these guys are professionals, and they've been out there for a while. This story about this crazy stone archway, it has nothing to do with any of the treasure. So how it starts, they meet this Native American whose tire was blown on the truck. So they stop by, help him out. He even says, man, you know, I've never met any nicer white people. So they shake hands, they leave, and they don't see each other for 2 months. So they are camping in these hills where they think this Spanish treasure is. And this rider comes into their camp, and it happens to be John. And he recognizes them. He shakes their hands. And he says he's working at one of the nearby ranches, and they're always checking on seeing who's outside the ranch. Obviously, you want to protect the ranch and the cattle within it. So they get to talking about landmarks and places where they think treasure might be. He said he's never actually went out looking for treasure, but he knew where some of the landmarks were, and he helped them out. So John starts telling them about this mysterious stone arch, and Ron tells him that, hey, we actually did come across a very similar formation, the same area you're saying, about 6 months earlier. And John asked him, hey, did you walk through it? And they said, no. And he said it was in an area above, and we didn't pay much attention to it outside of it just was strange, and we just kept it moving. So he tells them some of these crazy tales about this arch. And he said in the 1850s, there were Native Americans hunting in the nearby mountains, and they were camping next to the stone archway, and they were in good mood, and the hunt was successful, and they're chasing each other around and playing around. So one of the hunters jumps through the archway and never appears. He didn't even show up on the other side. He just went through and disappeared. So the other Native Americans thought that they had angered the gods and then take off and flee in terror. And they go and tell the medicine man in the village, and they're like, hey, this is why the young companion didn't come back, because he jumped through this archway and disappeared. And I know the skeptic would say, well, maybe they got in a fight out there and they killed him, and then they came back and said that he jumped through this archway and died. Well, it could be true, you know, that you got to look at all possibilities, right? Even skeptically. But the story continues with more stories about this archway. So the story spreads, and others are going up there to take a look at it. One Native American starts tossing rocks through, and they're all going through, and then the last one just disappears. And so they begin calling it the doorway to the gods because of that. Then another older Native American started messing with a live rabbit, and he threw the animal through several times, but nothing happened. But then John's father was there, threw a lizard through, and it disappeared immediately. So John had been past the archway plenty of times, and this is his own personal story he's telling now. And he said, man, I haven't seen anything weird with it. I've been by there a bunch of times. But in the fall of 1949, he said big storm had blown into Arizona. And he said the sky was completely covered with dark clouds in all directions. But as he rode past the archway, the sky through the archway was blue with no clouds. But he could also see everything else across it, like it was the same as it would be if he walked around the arch and looked at the land past there. It was all the same except for the sky was completely blue, no clouds, but then the clouds were completely covered around the archway and everywhere else. So he walks cautiously toward the arch and peers through it. And he says the mountains the other side hadn't changed. He said it looked the same, but the sky didn't have a single cloud showing and the sun was shining brightly. He freaks out, gets on his horse, rides away, and he said, I didn't even want to be around it. So it kind of reminds me of what people talk about the upside down, or almost like the inverse of the upside down in this case, where it was sunny and nice, but yet on this side, it was cloudy, completely covered in dark clouds. And I could see how that'd freak him out. He wouldn't want to go through it. And he totally took off on his horse. But he tells him the story and they end up going back up there to the arch several times. Nothing weird happens to them at all. And again, you're going to hear this even in the stories that John told, where sometimes stuff was happening, sometimes it wasn't. Kind of leads to the fact, is this thing open all the time? Does it open at different times? Who knows? We don't know how that stuff works. Is there some sort of ritual you got to do to open it? We don't know in this particular case, but this particular archway, the doorway to the gods, is known by several Native Americans in that area. And this is just another story of a very strange stargate, a very strange portal that's on Native American land. And it lends to this idea that the government, when they go into these places, they are looking to procure these for purposes that I would suggest are probably nefarious in some way. But I found it fascinating, and I love the idea of there being stargates specifically in places that are off the beaten path. We hear about a lot of portals and weird things in national parks. So that's also been procured by the government as well. So you got to think that they have access to these things. They know where they're at, or they have some sort of idea when they open, and they are contacting whatever off-world intelligences are on the other side. And this leads us right back to what the Hopi were talking about with the Kachina, and how we're in this fourth world, basically the fourth age. We're waiting for this next age after this cataclysm. And that's biblical too. When we're looking at the end and we're looking at the rebirth, the new kingdom that Jesus is going to bring, it's been stated many times. It might be stated in a convoluted and albeit given by negative entities to some of these other ways of looking at it, but it doesn't mean that they're far off. And I do think that governments, and I do say governments, believe that a way that they're going to be able to combat that, or a way that they're going to be able to even accelerate it, is in these sacred sites that have been in these places for centuries upon centuries. And when they find these places, they get access to them and they procure them and they take them away from other people who have been in these areas for a long time. And I don't think it's going to stop. I think they can continue to do this. And I think they're still looking for more. And I'm sure at some point I'll talk about some of the interesting stuff that came out of 9/11 when it comes to hidden stargates in Iraq and the real reason we were there. That will be something for sure I'll talk about, because I love talking about stargates and portals. I think it's just one of the most interesting and fun things to talk about, especially when we're talking about what the government's trying to do with them. Guys, I really appreciate you being here with me again this week. Make sure before you hit stop on this episode, go and give a 5-star review on Spotify. Go and give a 5-star review on Apple. Go write a review on Apple. I can't say it enough, guys, how much it helps the show grow when you go do that. Please go do that now if you can. Also, you know that Free the Rabbits merchandise is up and running. You can click on the link in the description. Also, my new song, Imposter, is going to play on the way out. And you know what it is, guys. Go outside, touch grass, and get your tail out the hole.
Mirrored illusions, I'm in a fun house. Locked in a boxcar with all of these clowns. Don't feel like I belong.
I'm just a ruse. Or maybe I'm just confused. Ooh, I'm a gorilla in the jungle, but my mind's got me trapped in the zoo. Pyramids of deception above the halls of Amenti. If I leave, will I even miss me? Yeah. Face to face with my ambition, yeah. My position with me, I'm in competition, yeah. I could be superstitious, cause it feels like it's a sickness. What you see is not what I see.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app, with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.